Oh, you can't fight the funk! And that funk means it's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Mac Mini Colo. They are the ones that made that possible, getting the show to you completely free. DLC, of course, the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. And also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, as always, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis. The guy who spent another year trying to become the first openly unqualified player selected in the NFL draft, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Frustrating. Hello, I'm just real down. I was looking forward to bringing my talents to South Beach, and it didn't happen this year.
Yet another year where you left disappointed, undrafted. But how do you feel about your Houston Texans getting Jadavian?
I think they can have a frighteningly good defense. I think their offense still has questions. And I think the only way that relates to video games is next year's Madden.
That's true. It is a game. And we are talking about games. DLC, of course, stands for your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. But this week, DLC also stands for Diversions and Livelihoods Combined, because from the Gamers with Jobs website and podcast, we have one of my very favorite writers on video games, Mr. Julian Murdoch. Welcome, Julian.
That's extremely sweet of you. I'm very excited to be here. I heard that initial music and I'm all pumped up.
Yeah, man. I love it. We got some fun stuff to talk about this week. We're on the road to E3. We got some fun stuff to talk about in that respect as well. So let's get right to it. The way we start the show, of course, as always, story of the week.
Story of the week. It's the story of the week.
Story of the week, of course, the part of the show where we try to convince one another of the most important story in the world of gaming that happened this week. And you, the listeners, can submit stories for us to consider all week long using the hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week. And we've got a lot of submissions this week. Julian, I'm curious what you thought was the most important story this week.
Well, It's tough for me not to go with my first love, which is Unreal Tournament coming back. I have so much love for this game. And while I haven't been super pumped on other reboots that sort of go to a free model like Tribes, I thought was a pretty good reboot, but it didn't quite capture the feeling of the originals for me. At Gamers with Jobs, we ran an Unreal Tournament 2004 night like 3 weeks ago, and it was crazy amounts of fun. So the idea that they're really going to do a reboot of this, they've got the original soundtrack composers coming back. It sounds like they're trying to be getting as many of the original team back together as they can to make it. It's still, to me, probably my favorite multi-person shooter of all time. So they can almost do no wrong for me on this. There's something about the model and the pacing and the weapon selection there that I don't think has ever been duplicated. Maybe that's old
what
school
version
of me,
did you
but
guys
I'd rather play?
Play
that than anything else. What?
Just recently when you said you played a version for Gamers with Jobs, what version did you play of Unreal Tournament?
2004. Which I think
okay.
is the...
So the most recent one.
Yeah, the most recent one, which I think really is the pinnacle of that that series. Certainly there's some great stuff about the old one. I actually recently replayed the original Unreal single-player game, which was super fun, too. Unreal 2K4 with the weapons combat and the vehicle combat, it's really unparalleled. So it was hard for me. Now, I know it's not like giant, earth-shattering, moving the markets news, but that was out of nowhere and unexpected and really, really appreciated for me.
No, this is big deal. This is a big deal. These games were huge in the early 2000s. I mean, everybody played them. It's interesting to me to hear you say that you have played it recently because I have not played it recently. And without having heard you say that, I would have thought they wouldn't hold up, that the whole first-person shooter genre has sort of progressed beyond that. I mean, Unreal Tournament is sort of synonymous with fast pace and, you know, get in, get some kills, get killed, get back in, just wash, rinse, repeat. And it's interesting. I'm going to be interested to see what this game looks like for a modern audience. Now, they're doing some really interesting things with it, i.e. giving it to people completely free, not just free to play, but free, free, free. And it seems to me a little bit like a Trojan horse to have people start messing around with the new Unreal Engine, because they're touting it as being modder-friendly and really kind of funded by modders. They're going to have a system in it where modders are able to sell their mods through the game, and then Epic will take a portion of those sales to fund development. So it seems to me that it's more about kind of creating a platform for getting people excited about working in Unreal, but it could be a really great game as well. What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, I think the, you know, mod created community is interesting. I don't know if I feel like it's a cop out or not. I've always enjoyed Unreal Tournament. Back in college, we would, you know, have big LAN parties and get together and play old school Unreal, and it's so much fun. And Jeff, I think the reason why it holds up so well is that it is get in, get out, and shoot, which, you know, is basic, yes, but I feel like that core basics will always hold up. It's fast, it's quick, you get kills, you know what you're doing, there's no gimmick to it where, oh, I don't have the right, I haven't prestiged four times, I don't have the right weapon loadout that I want. It's elegant in its simplicity. But I do think that I'd almost rather them make the game that they think needs to be made versus, and everything's going to be, you know, collaborated. We want your opinions. To me, that sounds like too many cooks in the kitchen, and I'm nervous about that. And the mod community has always been great around these games, but Epic has always released the version that they saw, and then the modders went crazy. And this, everybody involved, I have a feeling I might get like a 24-egg omelet with a steak in the middle, which sounds delicious, but the steak's probably not cooked right. That's my fear.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a cool idea.
Go ahead. I think it's a fair concern, but I also think that I think Jeff's hunch here is right, that this is a way to train a new legion of people on using Unreal Ed. You know, which for a lot of game developers, that's how they get started in this business. They start making maps in Unreal Ed, right? They start making models. And so I do think it's a Trojan horse for that. I think that they'll come out with a definitive edition, which is the basics of the game. And I think it will look surprisingly like UT2K4. I think that it will be something of a reskin of that with that same style of gameplay. I'd be shocked if they went any further, because I think that this type of gameplay is actually coming back. This is, I think, why Titanfall was so successful, is that in many ways it captures that feeling. It's not quite as fast-paced as Unreal Tournament, but it's pretty darn close. And that sort of get in, get out, and keep going mode really, I think, shines through.
Do you think that it should have progression? I mean, that's kind of a staple of competitive multiplayer shooters nowadays, is this sort of light RPG elements of progression and leveling up and having those hooks to keep you playing. Do you think that's something that this series should adopt, or should they stay away from that?
I hope they stay away from it. I mean, when it works and I'm really into the game, I sort of appreciate it. It gives me a little bit of a carrot. Like, Titanfall's a game that I've played, you know, sort of through whatever the first cap is and into a little bit of the next, which is a lot for me. I mean, I know there are people who've been through that cycle 10 times at this point, but for me to actually sort of cap out a game like that is pretty unusual, because I'm not that great at first-person shooters. So I actually hope that they leave it more accessible and make the skill what really gets you to that cap, not just because you put in the time grinding stuff out.
Yeah. One more question about this. I feel like back in the early 2000s, this game served as sort of a showpiece for the engine. Do you think it needs to carry that mantle as well? Does it need to be really beautiful in order to be what Unreal was?
I think for Epic it does, right? I mean, I think you're right. I think this is a showcase piece for them. And the fact that they're giving it away free and it's not some sort of hook to go buy a new gun right off the bat means that they can kind of get away with not having to be all things to all people. If you look at some of the other free-to-play shooters that have come out, particularly Tribes, they've deliberately kept things pretty simplistic so that it'll play on everything, which is great because it means you can play it on everything. But I don't think they need to do that here.
Interesting. Christian, what is your story of the week contender?
So I want to point out first that people have said, I've received some feedback like, man, you guys just harp on like bad Nintendo news. As you mentioned, a lot of the stories are submitted by listeners using the hashtag DLCSOTW. And this week alone, I think we had 5 or 6 Nintendo stories submitted that all paint arguably a bad picture for Nintendo, or the way they're proposed to us already have like a, oh, Nintendo getting on the NFC character bandwagon, like a negative slant. So if we talk about too much Nintendo, find your friend that also listens to DLC and tell them to quit submitting Nintendo stories.
Well, there was a lot of Nintendo news this week, to be honest.
There is. My story, though, is first gameplay footage of Sunset Overdrive being released and, you know, kind of discussed, narrated, pointing out some of the points of that game. I thought the initial reveal trailer at E3 was cool and exciting, and it kind of had, you know, the whimsy that was taken out of Fuse as that game was first released and then, I mean, first shown and then released. And Sunset Overdrive looks very true to that initial reveal trailer in terms of attitude and gameplay. And what people are describing it as is kind of a, you know, Jet Set Radio meets Dead Rising 3, you know, like a fast or Titanfall meets Jet Set Radio meets Kill a Bunch of Zombies. And I think the controls might be awkward. I'm curious to see how they simplify or how they make that control scheme accessible for all the tricks that were going on or how much control you have over each move.
Well, but think about Ratchet and Clank. Ratchet and Clank, you did a lot of that kind of stuff and it seemed pretty intuitive, no?
No, yeah, I think I have faith, but that's my concern. Like, I think it looks really great. I have faith that it controls well, but watching that trailer, the only concern I left with watching that trailer is the control smooth and fun, and will this game be fun for 8 hours? You know, is it that moment of fun repeated? But those are very small concerns for, you know, a game that we've just seen one trailer for that I think is officially on my hype wagon now. I'm really excited for that game.
Yeah, what did you think of the trailer, Julian? Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. And it made me, you know, it conjured up Jet Set Radio and Borderlands were the two things that really came to mind. Two games that I absolutely loved. The first Borderlands wasn't so much into Borderlands 2 when it came out on PSN Plus or PS Plus, played the heck out of it and really dug it. And I'm hoping that it sort of captures some of that vibe. Certainly some of the art style has some similarities, and that can really make or break a game for me when it shouldn't, I admit it. I'm picking up what it's laying down. I agree. It's all going to come down to how smooth and in control it feels. It's a very kinetic game from what we saw in the trailer. And anytime you have a game with that kind of movement as part of it, whether it's an Assassin's Creed game or, you know, wall running in Titanfall or Mirror's Edge or something like that, the difference between being 90% of the way there and being all the way there is generally the difference between fun and no fun. So assuming they nail it, like Christian said, I think it'd be great.
Yeah. I'd say in the chat room here, Tongarosa says he hopes there's more variety in the enemies. It certainly looked like they teased a whole bunch of enemies in that trailer. It sucks that at the beginning, at least, they're just kind of showing zombies because, man. And every company seems to be doing this thing where it's like, they're not zombies. These are ODs. You know, these are like some weird, you know, Last of Us or whatever, some weird, you know, a euphemism for zombie that it's our version of this. It's a freaking zombie, you know? And that's a little bit of a bummer that at least initially it's like, look at all these zombies running around the play area. But other than that,
hi, Jeff, this is Mark from marketing. And I just wanted to let you know that, the term zombies we're not using anymore. It's actually OD. So if you could stick to point when you're answering fan questions, we'd really appreciate it. Remember, it's ODs and the Z word is a no, no. All right, Jeff, back to you.
Yeah, that's kind of how it feels, right? I think it's a cool fiction for the universe. You know, it's built all around this energy drink, and it looks to have my brain isn't working. What's the GTA game that's open
Vice
world
City?
Game that is no the freaking oh my god my brain doesn't work Crackdown? The jokey one with dildos.
Saints Row.
You know what I'm talking about? Saints Row.
Saints Row.
God, I couldn't think of that. It has sort of that kind of irreverent.
One with dildos.
Hey, you guys got it, right? You got it. You guys got it. Anyway, gosh, sometimes in the morning my brain doesn't work. However, it has that same kind of, I think, irreverent feel. And I think that's fun. I like how it seems to be embracing color. And yes, everybody has been saying the same thing, which is it's the game we all wanted to play, which is Jet Set Radio with guns. Like, you know, you play Jet Set Radio and you're like, well, this is cool, but I kind of want to be blasting things as well. And they seem to have delivered that, at least visually. So I'm really excited, too. It looks really slick. The art style looks super next-gen and fun, and the color and the world itself seems to pop. And some of those weapons, you know, Insomniac is very famous for their inventive weapons, and here there's tons of inventive weapons. The sparkler gun looks really cool, and the bowling ball propelling thing, you know, it's fun. It's that kind of like, oh, I want to get the next gun because the next gun is going to do something wildly different than what I've been doing. And these idea of these modifiers that they're talking about, I can't remember the exact term that they use. We can get that guy from marketing on the line again. Maybe he could tell me. But these modifiers that I guess you earn, the sort of like, you know, prestige things or burn cards, their version of burn cards, I would guess, is that you can, you know, put on these different effects to your weapon, like the nuclear explosion that they showed. All that looks really fun, and it's certainly a game that I'm excited about. I'm worried it's going to be the only big Xbox One exclusive this entire calendar year,
Looks like a cool game. It's Mark again, and I believe you're talking about amps. Amps are what make weapons a little different and exciting in the unique world of Sunset Overdrive. All right, Jeff, take it away.
Thanks, Mark. I'm so glad we got him on the line here. Really appreciate that. Anyway, I think it looks cool, too. So I support that as being a valid Story of the Week contender. And I'm excited to get my hands on it at E3. But let's talk a little bit about some of this Nintendo news that you referenced, Christian, because there's a bunch of
We don't have to. We can pull a Tetris. We can just skip it.
Can we? Well, let's talk about it a little bit. Because, as you said, a lot of people submitted stories, so clearly they want to hear about it. And, you know, we were at the end of the fiscal quarter, so a lot of companies reported their earnings or losses. And, of course, Nintendo posted a big loss, $229 million, which is a bummer, but not surprising. And a lot of that has to do with the Wii U not selling, which is no surprise. It's something we've talked about week after week on this show and is no big revelation. However, I thought it was interesting that the one thing that we've also been talking about, we've been opining on this show over and over as a way for Nintendo to sort of maximize the Wii U, they finally came out and said, which is that they want to use the gamepad as the most important differentiator of the Wii U. And I think that's my big takeaway from that particular story submitted by @SyncoCross. Is that they are kind of recognizing that they need to do something with the gamepad and make it a thing. What do you guys think?
I agree completely that they need to do something to make it a thing, because right now it's mostly a dust collector until a bunch of kids come over to my house and want to play one of the launch games, which really is all that ever gets played on it in my house is the launch games.
Well, and we have Mario.
How is it not a thing? How is it they created the system with, like, this is what frustrates me about Nintendo. And for the past whatever E3s or Nintendo Directs, you know, they come out and apologize for something. Like, we know we needed to have games and we'll do it right next time. And we're sorry that this isn't, and now it's for you. And now they want to make the gamepad the differentiator in their console. What the heck were they thinking when they released the console with the gamepad? It scares me that they didn't have an idea for this thing, aside from what Julian said, you know, the pack-in or the Nintendo Land. And it's just like... Yeah. I mean, it's literally slapping my head against my hand, or my hand against my head, depending on how lazy I am and which one I feel like moving.
How are they getting to this? You did a really good job with this, right? I mean, I think we've seen the proof of concept that you can design games from the ground up with this piece of hardware in mind. I loved the heck out of Zombie U. It was great, and I loved what they were doing with it, and the idea that was sort of it. I mean, in this whole generation, how long has it been? Over a year, right? That's it. That's the one game that's really tried to do something unique with it that I've seen.
Yeah, and the biggest release coming out, which is Mario Kart, literally uses it as a horn button, which I keep railing on over and over. It seems to be the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Like, you have this giant screen, and you're going to use it to make one big button that's the horn. But sounds like they've at least recognized the problem and are taking steps to improve it. Some of the steps that they're taking were also stories this week. Such as new Pokemons
Pokemon Ruby Sapphire. This isn't going to help the Wii U particularly, but new Pokemons are good for Nintendo. They sell like gangbuster, and it looks like this remake of the old Ruby Sapphire for 3DS will be a good shot in the arm for the company. I don't know if this was sort of like, God, we need more Pokemons. Get the Pokemons out. Let's just remake one. Go, go, go. But I think it's going to be cool for Pokemon fans. You guys agree?
Well, Pokemon fans just need more Pokemon. So that's like it's a self-satisfying statement that you've made there, right? All you need as a Pokemon fan is another Pokemon. So yes.
Okay, fair enough. Well, also this other story submitted by at PDX Geek and Acorneo, about Nintendo jumping on this NFC figurine bandwagon that we've already seen Skylanders make tons of money with and Disney Infinity make tons of money with. And everybody, you know, we had the story, what, last week or the week before that Nintendo was actually offered the exclusive rights to Skylanders and went, we don't really see money here. So now clearly they have recognized the error of their ways there and realized that their incredible stable of IP is rife for this kind of merchandising. Iwata said, in other words, the figurines, which consumers buy and collect, are going to work with multiple software titles to be released in the future. I think this is a huge win for Nintendo. I wonder if you guys think it's too little too late or if they can kind of get in on this and, you know, couple this with Pokemons. All of a sudden you have over 700 little figurines you can make, not even counting
Mario
and
Zelda. Game
they
should have made 5 years ago. Yeah.
Well, do you think it's too little too late?
This news just broke. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I guess next year it looks like Nintendo's going to release a band game with plastic instruments.
Actually, didn't they already do that on the Wii? They put out that Miyamoto music.
Wii music.
Game. Yeah.
Wii music. That used the Wiimote, and that wasn't right. And what they're really going to use it as a differentiator this year is an actual physical plastic drum set, and they feel like the market is right.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Cynicism. What do you think, Julian? Is it going to be a cool thing for Nintendo or no?
I think it is way too little too late, right? I mean, we've already got a market. I mean, if you're a parent, right, and let's be clear, that's a parent or like a deeply nerdy person who's going to collect all these things on your own, you've probably already got at least a Skylanders thing in your house. How many of these little pedestals are you going to have sitting out on your, you know, on your coffee table so that you can get the box full of plastic toys to put on it? I mean, I dug Skylanders. I played a ton of it with my son. That was a great co-op experience. Frankly, it was a great co-op experience, not because of the little figures, but because the game was really good. You know, Disney Infinity, I don't really think delivered on the promise to me. It was fun, but I don't see why that would take over the world. Ultimately, if there's, you know, not such great games behind this, yeah, they'll sell a bunch of Pokemon figurines to people, but I'm not sure they're going to create the ecosystem that Skylanders did over the last 5 years.
Well, the interesting thing is that it could potentially be, I mean, as he's talking about, it'll work with multiple games. I think they have an opportunity because, you know, Disney Infinity figures work with Disney Infinity and Skylanders works with Skylanders games. Nintendo has the opportunity to let you play, I don't know, Mario Tennis and level up your Mario guy and then bring him into a platformer game and, you know, use him in a platformer game and get him a cool hat that he then takes into Mario Kart and wears in Mario Kart and then gets out of his Mario Kart because he just won 6 races and is awarded a new pants that he, you know, takes into. I think it. They have the potential of one-upping those other systems in that you can use this. This works with whatever kind of game you want rather than do I want to play a third-person action game running around in a world. There's that.
Here's my concern with that, though, is that we've already had a Mario Kart is coming out right around the corner. We've already had Mario Golf is already out on the 3DS. Mario Kart's already out on the DS. I fear if this is too late in the life cycle of this console to have those games come out that support that feature.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting point. It's too late in the console's life cycle. But
do you think it's built into Smash? Like this will, I guess they said, you know, that's kind of what they've said, that it'll have some integration with the Smash Brothers games coming out. And I think it could be cool. It's just, again, it hurts my heart that it seems like this is so late, and especially that they had, like we talked about last week, they had an early look at Skylanders. Was there a 5 years non-compete clause because the team brought that information to them or something? Maybe there is, but it's interesting. It's just, I don't understand how lay people seem to know so much more than people whose business it is to make video games, when Nintendo keeps doing these things and we're all shaking our heads. And they're
because
like,
it's easy to say.
You can watch TV on it, but it's kind of easy to do.
Yeah. I don't know if that's right? the case. I think it might not be easy to do. I think when there's an entire company's future at stake and billions of dollars, I think it's hard to make right decisions. But I agree that this does seem like a no-brainer.
I want to float this out. I tweeted it out, and I'll just let fans or listeners react to this. I don't think Nintendo has known what they're doing or been really relevant for core gamers, or whatever you want to call it, gamers in the console space since the Super Nintendo. And I think that's the problem.
I totally agree.
They've had great games and some of my favorite games, and I've had great memories with games on their systems. But in terms of them knowing what they're doing and having success because of something they made a decision about, I think they've been lost since then.
But wait,
and to expect them to turn it around is crazy.
How can you decouple those two things? How can you say they've made great games that I've loved, that I've had incredible experiences with, but they didn't know what they were doing? I don't understand how you can decouple those two things. Like, you're saying from a business perspective, they made poor business decisions, and yet they put out great products?
They've had a couple of really good games come out for all of their consoles, but in terms of understanding the console
Since Super
space,
Nintendo? They've had a yes. couple? A couple?
Yes.
They've had dozens and dozens of the most amazing games of all time come out of on their systems, on the N64, on the GameCube, on Wii, on Wii U, and on DS.
I didn't include handhelds. This was consoles, and I think that many of those games' success or those great games were in spite of the console they were released on. Mario Galaxy would be an infinitely better game had it been on the PS3 or Xbox 360 in terms of graphical prowess and able to being able to control the game with a controller that's comfortable.
I totally agree.
All right, Julian,
Metroid
tell me
Prime
why
would have been better.
tell me why Christian's not crazy. I talk to me about this because I'm
because I actually think that Nintendo has lost their way in terms of making hardware people want to put in their living room. I think that they're
the Wii
genuinely
sold like
not
gangbusters.
Getting the Wii sold like gangbusters to non-gamers, right? That's really the story of that. And once it sold a billion units, then they could say, oh, okay, well, we'll let the teams that make the good games for the core gamers make a few really interesting games to go along the way. But if you look at the actual hardware itself, right, the advantage that they came up with was actually making it cheap, right? I mean, everybody talks about how awesome it was to be able to swing your arms around. The actual advantage of that console from the American household perspective was it was so much cheaper than everything else on the street, and they kept it cheaper for so much longer that it became the easy thing to buy.
I think that Microsoft and Sony need to write a thank you letter to Nintendo saying thank you for creating our market. Like, the entire expansion, explosion of video games, I think you have to credit Nintendo for opening up video games to people who didn't play them. Who they got Wiis into living rooms that would not have ever had PlayStations or Xboxes.
I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying that from the perspective of making games that I particularly want to play, it's been a pretty long walk in the desert. I mean, there've been a few high spots, but they're high spots that have also largely been usurped by the other consoles in the same style of gameplay. I mean, Mario Galaxy, sure, you know, actually a genuinely innovative approach to the genre, but not that many more. I'm not saying that there are no competent games out there. I'm just saying that it's despite the hardware platform.
I think I got to go to a call on this because I need some perspective.
You
guys are blowing my mind.
You can't fathom how you're wrong?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. So our phone line is 512-518-5714. If you're listening live right now, you can call 512-518-5714. We record Mondays.
If you support Jeff, you can call live right now.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Okay, we got somebody from the 661 area code. Let's see. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And do you support me?
Hi, this is Michael from Amsterdam again here. And yes, Jeff, I do fully support what you're saying, because Nintendo's been there, at least for me, since the Super Nintendo, and I've loved what they've been doing. I do think it's kind of sad that to see where they're going now, but it looks like they have seen the error of their ways, so they're trying to actually make time, and I think with a little bit of luck, they'll actually make it. It's just a matter of time they're going to show at E3, so I'm actually really looking forward to that.
Well, I think his point is that he kind of agrees with you guys, but doesn't want to. it sounds like he's saying, no, they're doing terrible right now, and I'm nothing out that I want to play. But I think they understand that and want to keep going. I don't know, guys. I really feel like to say that they haven't done anything substantial since the Super Nintendo is grossly overstating it.
Jeff, they haven't made a console. They've had some great games, but I think that those games have been in spite of their hardware oftentimes, and the successes they've had with their hardware, i.e. the Wii, I think was a success almost, was a surprise to them in the way that it was a success, in the sense that they had Wii Sports that was great, amazing game, and it showed all this potential. And then other games that they released on their system that utilized that potential were almost non-existent. Even the games of their major franchises, Mario Kart Wii, you could control it with the Wiimote. Okay, there is that. Galaxy, the Wiimote was superfluous at best. Zelda, one-to-one control. Really? Admit that you wouldn't have rather played Skyward Sword.
What about inventing the analog stick? What about inventing the analog stick? No credit there?
And then in the Nintendo 64, they created the tri-spoke controller with an analog stick. Great. Fantastic. It was great.
What have you done for me lately?
It was also a cart-based system that released maybe 96 games over the life of it. The games were far more expensive than any other game. It cost them the Final Fantasy franchise and many other great RPGs that could have come to the system, and had games with... Oh, I swore, I apologize. With crappy sound because of the limitations of the system.
Wow. All right, one more call, and then we'll put this to bed. Maybe you guys are persuading me. It's interesting. Somebody from 401 is on the line. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what do you feel about Nintendo? Throw them out, baby bathwater. Throw them out. Yes or no?
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't say throw them out with the bathwater. I mean, personally, I think that it's not an either-or example. By the way, this is Casey. I'm calling from Tampa, Florida. I think both of you guys are right. There is no one side or the other. They are one of the greatest game companies ever made. They have released a lot of really wonderful, innovative titles, but they're also completely clueless, and they are letting it all pass them by.
Well, sounds like Casey's a uniter, not a divider. He wants to bring us together, guys.
I don't begrudge Nintendo. It makes me sad, but I think looking back at it, that's the realization I had the other day when that tweet came out. And no one wants them to, quote-unquote, right the ship more than me. But I think you could go back and listen to, Garnett's been doing great podcasts for years. And I think go back and listen to old One Up Yours or Weekend Confirms with you on there. And every time around this year, people are hoping Nintendo rights the ship. People wouldn't be hoping for them to right the ship if their ship hadn't been horribly off course since the Super Nintendo.
I think that this is like I think this is the plot of a Toy Story movie. And it's one of those things where you guys grew up loving your cowboy toy, and you played and played with it, or I should say your Italian plumber toy, and you played and played with it. But as you grew up, you went, man, I don't need that anymore. I'm an adult now. I can put that in the box and not care about it. In fact, what did it ever do for me? It didn't do anything. I like playing with my giant laser pistols and my robots, the giant mech robots that I can call down from the sky. And boy, I never needed a Italian plumber. And then one day you realize, oh, he was there all along in your toy cupboard, waiting for you to enjoy him, just trying to give you some joy, trying to create, make the world a better place. All right.
I realized that Rayman was a better 2D platforming game than Mario has had in years, and I play it and I have fun with that instead. Ah, single tier.
Well, there's one thing that we can agree on. It's that this show is grateful to Mac Mini Colo. Because they made the show possible. Mac Mini Colo is the original Mac Mini hosting company, and they're a sponsor of this show. They make it so easy to set up and maintain without the hassle of a setup fee. They have a world-class data center currently hosting hundreds of Mac Minis for satisfied customers from over 40 different countries around the world. And Mac Mini Colo makes sure you get great high performance no matter where you are. Never worry about running out of space because you can get up to 2 terabytes of storage and up to 16 gigs of RAM. And for those who want even more power, be sure to check out macprocolo.net, where they provide colocation services for your new Mac Pro. So just remember, Mac Mini Colo is where low cost meets high performance to create the perfect Mac server. Just visit macminicolo.net/5x5. That's macmini and then colo.net/5x5 to learn more. We certainly appreciate Mac Mini Colo sponsoring DLC, and we hope you support them for doing so. All right, moving on from Nintendo, because you guys are depressing me. I want to talk about my Story of the Week contender. And there's some really good contenders here, but I'm going to have to go with the thing that I keep going back to over and over and over, which is my vision of a world with high technology and amazing experiences. And this story submitted by Raj Diut. Man, Raj, I apologize. I never learned how to pronounce your last name. But, and also at USC McLeod, the Oculus CEO, Brendan Uribe, told an audience at TechCrunch Disrupt that he basically wants to make the Oasis from Ready Player One, and that's one of the reasons that they went to Facebook. They want to create a 1 billion person virtual reality MMO, which is awesome, because that's I want companies that have all the money to have goals that are lofty like that. Yes, make that for me, and make it for me because you're the only company that can. Now, let's set aside all the fears of whatever, Facebook, yada, yada, yada. I like the idea that the Oculus dudes are thinking that big, and he even admits in this TechCrunch Disrupt talk that it's going to take a bigger network than exists in the world today, but that Facebook's network makes a great place to start. And he's talking about creating disparate virtual worlds that are united by one metaverse, which is basically Ready Player One. And I want this to happen.
Yeah.
You're excited, Julian?
I'm very excited. I think that at some point somebody will pull this off. I think I'm excited that they're thinking this big, not so much because I think they'll pull it off anytime in the near future, but because it means they have their sights set on getting the hardware right and cheap, which I think is the main thing, right? If they were thinking, oh, this is a niche product, they're never going to get to the point where you're buying one of these things for $100 off the shelf. If they're thinking we need to figure out how to manufacture a billion of them,
right,
then they're going to be worried about their parts cost and compatibility and people with glasses and all those things that can be a real issue when you're talking about a proprietary little piece of hardware like this. So I love the Oculus VR. I got my first positive experience with it at the last E3 PAX East. And I'm very excited by what they can do with it. I still find it a little claustrophobic and weird, but I'm willing to acknowledge it's probably where things are headed. So I love they're thinking big. I'm still not sold that the metaverse makes a ton of sense in the next 20 years, but hey, what the heck? Go for it, man. Build it big.
All right, Christian, tell me why this is dumb and Nintendo shouldn't even be involved at all.
Nintendo is not involved. This, I think, is right up your alley. I have never been a big MMO guy. I think a billion person MMO. So here's why the show is just like, Jeff gets excited about things. Christian's realistic. Remember Matt? Remember Mag? And, you know, the online-only shooter Sony
yes.
created by... Okay, you're great. And it had so many players, and you're all doing these things, and everyone's like, well, this is going to be crazy. This is going to be just a crazy house. I was going to... you know, no one's going to... And they're like, no, don't worry. To keep things organized, we break you off, and then you only come together for a big fight at the end, and otherwise you're fighting against six other people. so wait a minute, I'm basically playing 6v6, well, more like 4v4, but sometimes you get together and it's then, so like, what about, let me ask you this, what about a billion person, besides what Julian said that shows practical implications of having such a large MMO, gets you excited about, like, why do you need that? How is a billion people going to make an MMO experience better for you?
Well, I think it's more about how many people are involved in that world, right? So if you have a billion people involved in a world, that world is going to be vast and interesting and full of content and theoretically well-funded. So, I mean, in the vision of what Ready Player One is talking about, where you have one virtual world where I can log on and go do the fun thing that I want to do, but everybody I know can also be there with me should they want to, or they can be doing their own unique, different, weird thing. I think that's kind of rad. And I think the idea of creating disparate universes that are all linked by one central logon, yes, it gives one company a whole lot of influence, and that's a little frightening, but it also, you know, unifies the experience to a point where, you know, we can have a common language across all these games and have one robust virtual world that is freaking awesome to be a part of. I think that's the silver lining version.
Okay. I mean, I get it. I see how that gets you excited. I think then I'd love to see it, you know, at some extent you'd want like a Minecraftable game or something where it's not just instances where you're together with people, where it's a bigger, you know, let's build this world together kind of world that lets you then do things that you can't do in the real world. But I think, yeah, just like a billion person, we're all kind of going through the same quest, to me sounds boring.
No,
but,
I don't think
it's all interacting.
It's got to be a version of Second Life, right? That,
yeah.
That's not weird and sucky and full of perverts, right? But that's the key, is that you need those kinds of tools where you can, you know, a company can just use the platform to make their next big game inside that world.
Right.
Right. And the closest infrastructure we have to this is the kind of things that, you know, that Blizzard's doing a little bit with things like Hearthstone, where you've actually got at least some crossover between games and things going on into the same login. I love that. I want to see more of that. So, I mean, baby steps, but. You know, I'm glad somebody's out there solving the big hardware problem while developers are taking little tiny baby steps on the real integration on the software side.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised from Blizzard's perspective that you are already able to walk into a tavern in World of Warcraft, have your character sit down and start playing Hearthstone, which it then loads up inside World of Warcraft. You know, I'm surprised that...
Oh, just wait. I'm sure that's in the plan.
I'm surprised that hasn't already happened. And you know... That kind of inter-universal handshaking, you can see as nefarious. You know, you already, if you win, I think, three games in Hearthstone, you get a new mount in WoW. It's like, oh, I saw some people tweet, oh my gosh, it's so evil. It's like, it's not evil. It's cool if you're into those games. And if you think of it as a way to propel you into those games, well, either resist it or, you know, it's something cool that you get for playing both games. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. No. But yes, I love this. I love the ecosystem of being able to turn on my Blizzard loader and see what everybody else is playing in the Blizzard world. So did I lose you guys?
No. Nope.
Oh, okay.
Right there with you.
Awesome. A couple other quick stories I wanted to hit on.
Yo, Story, you look good. Hey, you need a ride somewhere? Yo, Story, I got room. Hop in. Let's go to In-N-Out.
Afterwards,
come back to my place, and we'll play some sweet Nintendo games.
That's how we hit on stories. What do you guys think of this Birdly thing? That's another VR story that kind of tweaked my interest. So Birdly is this VR rig that some people are making where you are a bird. You lay down on a thing, and you put your arms in a thing, and you flap them, and it lets you be a bird.
Universal appeal. I can see them selling. I can see them selling positively dozens of these to MIT students.
Flappy Bird's coming back, and this is how you have to play it.
Yeah. How can we make Flappy Bird more frustrating? Lie on your stomach and control it with this thing. Again, I'm going to be the guy who says, I think it's cool that this technology is engendering outside-the-box thinking like this, and people are creating crap that you would never have seen before.
They're creating what?
Yes, it's crap. I mean, yes, it does. This doesn't look particularly compelling to me, but it's just cool that there's this new tech that people are like, what weird thing can we use it for?
I'm going to be the positive guy. People are making junk. finally a product that gets people motivated to just make total crap.
The lawman in the chat room says it's the greatest American hero simulator 2014.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Sums it up.
That's brilliant. If you can only crash onto your head, which you probably can if you lay on that thing wrong. All right. Any other stories here you guys want to talk about before we get to the playlist?
Darksiders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tell me about this, Christian.
So, Jeff, how do you say Joe's last name? I've never been able to say it.
Madeira.
Madeira?
Yeah.
Joe Madeira?
Okay. I believe so.
Darksiders artist, comic book artist, wonderful artist, tweeted saying that Darksiders is not dead. The new owner seems very committed to continuing the series. He doesn't know if he's going to be involved, but just that little, it seemed very matter of fact. And, you know, I like to live in a world where until a game comes out, it doesn't exist kind of thing. Like, I was thinking back to last year's E3 and how many games that still aren't out. Or, for instance, BioShock on the Vita.
Right.
You know, not happening. But Darksiders, I think, Darksiders 1 was a fantastic game and a really cool take on the Zelda type of gameplay. Darksiders 2, I think, lost its course a little bit, but I really like that world. I think it's obviously full of so many things they can do with the, you know, death or any of the other horsemen of the apocalypse, and to know that there might be life left in that series, I think is really exciting. Jeff, I know you are a Darksiders fan.
Yeah, big time. I really, really dug the first game. Second game I thought was an interesting direction to go from the first game, you know, adding loot and kind of making it this weird hybrid Diablo-style game. So I was sad to see that potentially no more Darksiders after the whole THQ meltdown. But this gives you hope. This gives you a lot of hope. I think this is a worthy franchise to continue, and I would love to see a full next-gen version. It sounds like he's talking about a DS version here, right? But I would love to see
a full
next-gen.
I wasn't sure if that was a DS version or just abbreviating Darkstalker.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
DS.
That makes more sense.
Bring it on. What? I love the first game. I never played the second one. It could really benefit from being on a better graphics engine, so bring it on.
I like what the Gru gives you a tribute to a quote, Spicer. It says, it's Zelda if it wasn't made by that moronic Nintendo company. Good one, the Gru. Zinger. All right, guys. Well, actually, before we do this, Christian really wants to start the E3 hype train already.
Choo-choo.
We're a month out, and
choo-choo.
He wants to start the E3 hype train now. And he wants it to be a slow burn. I said, Christian, this seems like a little early to start the E3 hype train. That was a pause for you to do the choo-choo, dude. Come on. Anyway.
Choo-choo!
There it is. And but he insisted. He insisted we start it. So here we're going to do a couple of E3 preparatory prediction-y kind of questions each episode leading up to the big dance. And,
love it.
And we'll start that today. So which of these questions do you want to do today?
Number one here that I shared with you guys, what console manufacturer will show an exclusive game that you end up being the most hyped for at E3? So it needs to be a console exclusive shown by Nintendo, Microsoft, or Sony. It doesn't need to be coming out within the next year. You know, it could be, you know, a Watch Dogs 2 years ago and that wasn't exclusive. But you know what I'm saying? Like Halo, the Halo teaser. Which of these manufacturers will show something? Show something. You can't just say it. You need to have at least a logo or a video, a little something of a console exclusive that you'll be like, that's the one.
And we're going to go to the phones for this as well. So I want to have an audience member weigh in. 512-518-5714 if you want to be involved in that discussion. But Julian, I'm interested to hear what you think.
You know, I'm going to be shocked if any of them come up with an exclusive that I'm that pumped about, because I think the whole era of exclusives is kind of fading very quickly for me. There's just not that much. The only thing, I honestly think we'll see more of Halo, and I'll be excited about that. But that's like not a much of a big prediction. I can't think of anything on the other consoles that might be coming that will get me as pumped.
You don't think we'll see at least a teaser for a next-gen God of War? Or does that not do anything?
Julian, we were getting along so well. Watch what you say carefully.
No, I played the God of War series. To me, I enjoyed playing that game more on handhelds than I did on the big screen. I played the crap out of the PSP version of that back in the day.
They were great games.
I'm just not, you know, they'll show something that'll be beautiful, but Kratos has left me behind. I think I'd be way more happy to follow Master Chief around for a while.
I'm going to go to the phones before I go to you, Christian. Let's see. We got somebody calling in from 720 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what is your exclusive title that would get you hyped?
It's the manufacturer. You don't need to name a game. You can just say, I think that Nintendo will show an exclusive that I will be super excited for.
Well, okay. All right. You make the rules here. I think we lost that guy, actually. So I'm going to go to 703 area code. Same question.
This is Josh in D.C. Can you kind of rephrase the question there?
So I want to know what console manufacturer is going to show the game that gets you super amped for next gen?
It's probably going to be Sony, regardless of who it is, just because of the progress that they've made with indies lately. I mean, I find myself really eschewing a lot of the AAA titles like Titanfall and things of that nature, and finding that I enjoy the shorter, other more indie-like experiences more so on PS4 and Vita.
Well, if last year is any indication, this year indies will have a big part in E3. They certainly did last year, and it seems like both companies, Microsoft and Sony, are embracing indies, you know, quite a bit. And I think that's interesting. I think that, yeah, some of the biggest announcements we've seen recently, No Man's Sky, for example, was sort of the talk after the VGXs, and that was an indie game. So some of those games can really take a lot of the hype train away from the bigger titles at some of these events, depending on how they're shown. So that could be really cool. But either company, I think the way you phrased this, Christian, it makes people say, like, well, what's your favorite console? You know, it's basically, what console do you think is going to work best at E3?
Nope. All right, well, it's what you answer it then. Console manufacturer. I think I'm Microsoft because, and now to dive in and give a specific, I think Microsoft will show an exclusive that will get me the most excited at this year's E3, and I'm hopeful that exclusive shown is more from Remedy, is more from Quantum Break. I love Remedy, but I think Microsoft, the reason I think that they're going to show an exclusive that gets me more amped is I think Microsoft has their back against the wall a little bit right now, and I think that they're going to come to bat with an exclusive, which they're not known for having over the past few years. You know, they've had some great exclusives, don't get me wrong, but they've also spent a lot of that money getting exclusive DLC or early release DLC for multi-plat games. But I think that this E3, they're going to have one or two really big exclusive punches that will leave people going, now I want to get an Xbox One. If I didn't have one before, now I'm going to want to get one.
Whereas, do you think that
Sony,
this is going to be...
they're going to be playing it safer.
Do you think this is going to be from an established franchise that we all know, or will it be something new?
I'm hopeful it's something new. Like I said, I hope it's Quantum Break that just wows and they show more actual gameplay of and just really impresses. Mm-hmm. I don't think an established franchise can get people as hyped at this point as something new when those established franchises are at number 5 or 6 or 7 in the franchise. I think a part 2 can get people super hyped, but I think a God of War 7 or Gears of War 14 or, you know, whatever it is, the hype dwindles a little bit.
What do you think would happen if The Last Guardian was shown on PlayStation 4 at E3?
Oh, yeah, then it would definitely be that.
Yeah, okay, but now, so, yeah, right.
Not going to happen, huh?
No.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Okay, well, we'll keep this E3 hype train rolling in the next few weeks, so I hope you guys tune back in over the next 3 weeks with Christian wrote up a whole bunch of questions here, prediction type questions. So we'll string this along and we'll let you guys participate by calling in as well. So I hope you can hang out with us on a Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific for that. But right now we got a debut of the brand new playlist bumper music sent in by Sean Madigan. Check this out. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Kind of love that. It's playlist time. So, Julian, what is on your playlist?
Kentucky Route Zero Episode 3. Hard for me to be any happier about a game. That came out a couple days ago, I think. Or at least that's when I sort of realized that it was sitting there in my queue. And if you haven't played the first two episodes, you know, it's an indie game that's sort of a very surreal, almost David Lynch style storytelling game with a really unique quasi-monochromatic art style and an amazing soundtrack. Definitely on the sort of deep end of the pool on the smelly hippie indie game scene. They're doing some stuff in episode three that I've just never seen done before. Some game within a game stuff. There's some use of music where you're actually helping create music during the game that then I think influences how the story unfolds. Lots of choices about which character you're following from scene to scene, which totally changes your experience of it. I'm just enormously pumped over it. They took a long time to get episode three out, and it's better than the first two combined and probably longer than the first two combined. I think it's about 3.5 hours. So that's been big. Have either of you guys played any of the series?
No, this is one of those games that's on my pile of shame that I meant to play and had heard people say great things about and just never got around to it when the first two episodes came out. I should probably rectify that situation. Christian, did you play it?
Yeah, no, same. I actually own the first chapter, and it's one of those games that I forget that I have games on my computer, if that makes sense. I run a dual boot off my Mac Pro tower, and I just forget to boot up into Windows and play all the games I have there, which I went back into this week a little bit and played some stuff, but otherwise I need to. It's sitting there. I just don't play it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite little indie games of all time. The other thing I actually put a bunch of time into is Super Pole Riders from the Sports Friends collection.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Oh my God, so much fun. I mean, the Sports Friends is a collection of four games, my favorite of which is Joust, which I was a beta tester for, which is the one where you're holding, if you haven't seen it, it's the one where you're holding the Move PlayStation Move controller. The only thing they've ever been sold for is playing this one game, basically like a cup full of water and trying to knock it out of other people's hands. But I tend to play that outside, so I'm not actually playing that on the PS3 version that dropped. The reason to buy it on the PS3 is because Super Pole Riders, which uses buttons and an analog joystick to basically just kick a balloon back and forth across a wire. It's four-player mayhem, and it's more fun than Super Smash Brothers. It's just the best. It's super simple.
Yeah, I played this at conventions only because it's only local multiplayer, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it's I don't really have much need for the game. I don't have much opportunity to play that. I don't have people like hanging out in front of my computer or, you know, hanging over out over my house enough to justify it. But in that other context of being in a situation where you can walk up and play with strangers at a convention, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I have a sort of fairly regular mini conventions in my house where I have 40 or 50 people here. And so these kinds of couch co-op games are enormously important. Games like this and Towerfall, you know, they really do have a place sort of in my rotation of things that I want to be able to have around. Plus, yeah, I've got kids around all the time. So having a game where you can hand the controller to somebody and say, here's what you do, and 5 seconds later they're playing, and they'll play for 2 hours laughing their butts off, that's a pretty rare treat. So for $20 or whatever it is, it's a total steal. And the version of Joust, if you haven't played that, and you have a decent enough living room, even with just two people, you don't even need a Move controller. You can play it now with just your regular DualShock controller, although it's not nearly as fun. It's a great way to experience that. And there's a couple of other games on it, too, that I know a lot of people are very fond of. But those are the two to me that really stand out.
Jeff, how do you say that you don't have people to get together and you play board games?
Yeah, I know. I saw Trojan say that in the chat room as well. You're right. It is. But I don't. It is. But if I have people over my house, that's why I'm bringing out the board games. But maybe I should try to do this more. But yes, you're absolutely right. I didn't even realize how hypocritical that sounded.
Well, and I think there's this great revolution of people realizing that getting together with actual human beings in the same room is a lot more fun than just playing on the internet.
Oh, for sure.
So I think it's great to have lots of opportunities to bring people over, whether it's just like, you invite a friend of yours over and his girlfriend that may not be hardcore gamers. You're not going to necessarily pull out Lords of Waterdeep. But you can sit on the couch and say, yeah, you just move left and right and hit the button, push the button to kick, and, right. and you're done. Which is all you're really doing in Pole Riders, or actually you're even just moving the two controllers and not even a button on it. So I love games like that bring people together in the real world. So
for sure,
hey guys, come over, we'll play Pole Riders.
Okay, maybe that doesn't sound so good.
Christian, what pole have you been riding this week?
So as I mentioned, I just forget. I think this is true of all digital games. Like, I kind of forget what games I have sitting on the hard drive of my consoles because I don't see the boxes sitting there staring at me being a pile of shame. But I jump back into my Steam account on my PC. And, well, first of all, I've officially given up. I know I've been tinkering towards a platinum on Infamous Second Son.
You're a quitter.
And yeah, I'm a quitter. Playing it on the harder difficulty, which is needed before you can unlock the platinum, finishing the game like that, it just quit being fun for me. I love that game. I think it's a fantastic game. I think if you own a PS4, it's totally worth checking out. I think it's really, really, really fun. But I quit having fun with it partway through that, and so I decided I'd move on. And I dove back in. I never finished Spec Ops: The Line. I'm going through and doing some cleaning house, so I dove back into Spec Ops: The Line, which I know all about now. Obviously, it's been out for so long, you can't avoid spoilers. But I kind of want to experience it myself. I think it's fun. It looks nice enough on PC. It's not mind blowing. And then I've been wading through the gorgeous jungle that is Far Cry 3 some more. That's a game that I have not put nearly enough time into, and it's fantastic. It's such a good game, and the fact that I keep moving on from it, I think just shows how I prefer to play games on my couch versus on my PC. Mm-hmm. But at the time, the PC version of that game is so superior to the PS3 or Xbox 360 version of it that I couldn't justify buying it for the console when I had a PC that could play it on high settings. Man, what a great game. I hope that Far Cry 4 comes out on the PS4 and Xbox One and is as incredible of a game as Far Cry 3 was on consoles. I'm trying to think what else. There was one other game that I went back into. Call of Slinger Juarez. I've played it through. I just wanted to bring it up that if you have not played Call of Juarez Gunslinger, it's cheap everywhere. And it's one of my favorite games from last year. Yeah, period. Top 10 for sure. I think it's a really fun way to do a first-person shooter. It's one of those games that I made time to play in the morning or late at night when I was too tired to, quote, play games. I was like, no, I'm having too much fun with this game. And so if you're in a little bit of a lull and don't know what to play right now, that'd be a game that I'd recommend checking out. It's so good. So good.
And some really interesting narrative stuff. I mean, the shooting mechanics are fantastic, but the way they tell the story is also really original and fun.
Yeah. And from a game that when you see Call of Juarez, I think it's like, yeah, pass. It's not a strong IP per se, but it's a really cool game.
Speaking of quitting things, Julian, I noticed that you wrote down that you canceled your Elder Scrolls Online subscription this week.
Yeah, I was coming up on the point where I was going to have to start paying, by the week, by the drip.
Yeah.
I wanted to love it so much more. I know a bunch of folks that worked on it, that I really wanted to see all their work. I may be over this kind of MMO for a while. I may need a break. That just may be what it is. And I never got over a problem that I played all of the other Elder Scrolls games, and I always sort of have this sense of loneliness. Mm-hmm. And I actually found that sense of loneliness was worse because there were other people in the room, which I know is a very strange way of putting it. But that it just didn't gel for me. I appreciate a lot of what it was doing. I thought it delivered the Elder Scrolls experience the way it needed to, and it would, you know, everything that you've said about it, I agree with in terms of how it's delivering different kinds of story beats and sort of upsetting your expectations about what a given kind of quest is always going to be, and that's all really cool. And I loved some of the open world stuff, but man, I got up to like level 13 or something like that, and I was just done. So. Maybe I'll come back to it, but I think I'm holding fire for eventually jumping back into WoW a little later this year.
Well, what do you think about this announcement this week that, you know, the console version of ESO got delayed 6 months, but they're allowing you, if you purchase the PC version already, to get the console version for only $20, and you can transfer your character over. It's kind of cool.
It's cool. It strikes me as a little bit desperate.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, I think that they're doing that kind of because they have to, because they have figured out that it's a little bit harder to do this than they thought they were going to. I think the honest truth is this style, this payment model of MMO is really hard to maintain in the modern world.
Yeah.
It really is. When you've got brilliant games like LOTRO out there just hanging around for free, you got to do something really special to get $150 a year out of somebody.
It's going to be interesting to see, you know, in the next couple of weeks here, we've got WildStar launching as well, which is also going to be a pay-to-play game and doesn't have even the benefit of an established IP. It's new IP, but it looks really cool. I've played the beta.
Cool. I got an invite to the beta, but I haven't logged in yet.
It's pretty cool, man. I think you should check it out. I'm pretty excited about that game, but... if it wasn't for Dark Souls, I would still be playing Elder Scrolls Online. But now I'm the guy that I didn't think I would ever be, which is the Dark Souls 2, like every day trying to get some time in to play that game. And I wanted to kind of update the audience on my situation with that game, because I definitely had this week that frustrating kind of thing that I don't like, and the thing that I was worried was going to be Dark Souls the whole time, which was there's this elective area, and the point of the story should reinforce the fact that it was elective, not required for progression. But this elective area called the Belfry Luna, which is there's these sort of guilds in the game that can be PvP guilds, and so if you get into that. This area is one of those areas where it'll throw you into other people's games. And so there's this really short pathway between entering the Belfry Luna and getting to the boss. And you kind of walk over this bridge, open a door, and then you have to go up two flights of stairs where there are enemies on each flight and get into the cloud gate where the boss is. And the boss happens to be a particularly tough boss. It's these four gargoyles. So you kind of want to be ready to go through that gate, but as soon as you walk across that bridge and open that door, you are likely going to be invaded. And I was invaded not by one person, but oftentimes by multiple people. And so it's other human beings that are trying to kill you. And I would be killed over and over and over again just trying to get to the boss door and trying to summon an ally or something, and you can't summon an ally once you've been invaded, so you're kind of having to do things fast. You're trying to rush up the stairs and get in. And it was one of those things where I was like, I've turned a corner and this is not fun. Because I felt overwhelmed and I felt, you know, the odds were against me. Yes, I could try to defeat the human players, but oftentimes it was more than one person against me, and I was, you know, PvP in games has never been my favorite thing. So eventually I managed to get a friend into my game and we killed the people that invaded us and got in the gate and beat the boss, which ended up being that kind of situation that Dark Souls is famous for, where you get beat down and beat down and beat down. And then once you triumph, it made the beatdowns worthwhile. You know what I mean? It's all the much sweeter because you did it. But it was a gauntlet of pain that you had to get through to get on to the other side of that experience and enjoy it. So I'm just saying that I've definitely have had the experience that everybody that doesn't play this game, including myself, is afraid of. And that experience is inside this game. But I will also say that I have a unique personality trait, which is this was an elective area and I could have just avoided it. But I was like, no, I'm going to do it. And
once you went in, could you have like said, not for me, and then just moved on to other things? Or was like, were you trapped there until you finished?
No, once you go in, and if you die, you don't have to go back in. You respawn not in. So you don't have to go back in. But I'm that kind of idiot that in the, you know, in the first person shooter game, if I go left and I start getting and I die and I die three times going left, I'm going to keep going left instead of going right, which is probably an easier way to go. I just want to do it. And I'm not proud
of
that.
You need to play poker. That's what's got to happen.
I don't know. That particular quirk in my personality is not one that leads to fun. Oftentimes it leads to frustration, but I don't know why I can't seem to just give up. It's a hard thing. I have to keep beating my head against the wall and stressing out and sweating in my chair. I mean, I play Dark Souls and I'm like a sweaty mess by the end because I'm so stressed. It's crazy.
Well, that's the fine line of difficulty. I know this is players coming in, but I mean, I think that's the line of difficulty that, in my opinion, all games should strive for, where you maybe beat it on your first try, or don't, but it's you beat it before you get too frustrated. But it's that, you know, it's been said a million different ways, but you know, the only reason that you're ever happy is because you're sad, or the only reason success feels good is because of the work you put in, blah blah blah, however you want to put it. But you know, like for me, one of my greatest gaming moments of last gen was when I beat Mega Man 9. I put so much time into that game. And I didn't play the bosses, you know, the levels, the easiest progression, because I didn't look it up and I just kind of went through it. But it was so satisfying, and I was always ahead of that too frustrated difficulty curve, right? And being able to bring in someone to Dark Souls and play with a friend, I think helped get you past that hump. And I think it is reasons like that why they included that feature, and such a smart feature to have in the game. Whereas, you know, at some point, you keep getting frustrated. It happens 15 more times. It's very possible you put it down and never play it again because you won't turn right. You know, exactly. You know what I mean? All that game is to you is dying on those stairs. And yeah, you don't want it to just be, you know, push L to win either. And it's that balance. And I think that's why I think adding support like that from friends is such a smart thing in those types of game, in the Souls games.
Let's talk a little bit about Hearthstone, because I know, Julian, you're a big fan of that game, as am I.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me some fun stories or you know, tell me your experience with Hearthstone. Are you still playing it? Are you digging
it? I loved your story last week of dropping whatever the Elder Dragon thing is,
yeah.
Deathwing,
yeah.
On the table and then having it sheeped. And I've been playing mostly a druid. That's what I've been playing ranked
me too.
With, and I'm not very good. You play druid?
Yeah, that's my main deck.
It's like we're brothers. and I'm not very good, but I have gotten to the point where I'm starting to see how I want to play the druid in ranked. So I am melting down cards and getting dust and trying to buy up the deck and try different things and moving up a little bit here and there. And I like the fact that the ranked system is always resetting, so that there's not that sense that I'll never be any good, because it's like, oh, next month I'll start all over and I'll be able to move up a little bit. So the ranked stuff I really enjoy,
but
it is a pretty good way to...
The thing I've learned about that is you'd never want to play ranked games at the beginning of the month.
Oh, because you're going to be thrown in with everybody who's really good.
Everybody is the same low rank, and the guys who should be ranked way higher are just churning to get that way. So you're like, oh!
Trolling you.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. League of Legends is the same way, right? When they reset the ranks in League of Legends, it's all bets are off for the first month. But I've enjoyed
that. That's the
only
time to play.
I do really think that the complexity ramps up as you understand the game better. I think somebody in the thread said the common thing, which is, oh, it's Magic for babies. Well, you know, I still have a Magic Online account with way too many cards I spent way too much actual money for. and I go back to that, but this is particularly because it's on the iPad. It's so accessible and so addictive. And in, I really love the arena mode. I've managed not to spend any money yet, but they're like the other night, I really wanted to play an arena game. I was just right in the zone where I had like an hour. I wanted to crank out a bunch of games and I had like 60 gold. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to have to grind like 5 quests in order to get this. Yeah. It was tempting. It was very tempting.
It's so easy. It's right there. It's just $2.
Yeah. Just $2. Yeah. No, that way lies madness.
I wanted to, there's a couple of things I wanted to mention about Hearthstone. And Christian, if you're still playing, I'd love you to jump in on the stories too. But one of my favorite things is the come from behind win where you are lower in health than your opponent and they think they've got you because of what's sitting out on the board. And
oh wait, you mean just quit saying you and start saying Christian thinks he's got you. And he never gets you. He never gets you.
Well, that's why I love
you. If you won Hearthstone by getting your opponent down to 5 health before you, I'd win every time.
That's why I love the Druid class, because it's got that burst damage. And I love those rounds where I'm down to very little health and he's got 20 and then all of a sudden I go slam, boom, bam. It's like, you didn't even know that was coming, buddy. Those are very satisfying. But I had a particular game this week that I wanted to mention that was really satisfying is, have you guys had those games where you get down and both of you have expended all of your cards and you're kind of both just going back and forth and only have one card to play. And you're like, yeah, it's like whittling each other down. I had that kind of situation, but I also had the situation where I ran out of cards completely. And, my opponent had several cards and he had lined up a bunch. And in the course of using up all my cards, I had whittled him down to 1 health point. And he had got me down to like 10, right? And then he had lined up several dudes on his board. And I thought he was, you know, about to kill me, right? The next card I draw is, I think I was playing Paladin maybe? Anyway, there's a card that allows you to draw up to your hand to the same number of cards as your opponent. So I played that, drew up 3 cards, one of which was the Elven Archer. I put down the Elven Archer, which does 1 point of damage, and it's the wimpiest 1-gem card, and I just shot 1 point of damage past all his like mounting army of people who were ready to kill me and just knocked him for 1 point of damage and won the game. And it was like, it was so cool because I had no chance except for the fact that I happened to draw that Elven Archer card, which let me shoot past his defenses. So fun.
I think the game lends itself to those kinds of stories. I mean, my favorite thing to do in these kinds of games is to win by annoying my opponent to death. And I've had quite a few games where, particularly with the Druid, where it's like you draw the right stuff towards the end of the game and it's like, oh, you thought I was at 5 health. No, I'm at 25 health.
Right.
And they just, you can't communicate. You can't see the sweat and frustration. There's no table they can actually flip. But I just love then grinding it out after that.
Yeah. Yeah, or you do that fun combination of like the guy who's got this big pimp card that he just saved up a bunch of gems and threw down, and if you're playing mage or something, you do that combination of like of Faceless Manipulator to make a copy of it, and then Polymorphed Sheep It. So it's like, oh, thanks for that, pal. Anyway, there's lots of fun combos like that. The annoying other people thing brings me to another thought I had, which is something I've said before, but I always want to underscore it because this game, I think, is only fun for me because there's no chat feature. And if I had to sit there and watch somebody talking or, you know, whatever, bad-mouthing me the entire game, it would not be fun. And I think they could have easily put in the same World of Warcraft chat that, you know, has been in their games for a long time. But the fact that they made that smart decision to limit your interaction to those word bubbles, I think, makes all the difference.
My only disagreement is that I should be able to chat with people on my friends list. That's
well, you
the
can.
Thing that's annoying.
You
right?
can.
Oh, you can.
Yeah, you can. But by going through the friends list button. It's not in the game itself. It's through the fact.
You know, that's what I mean. When I'm playing with a friend, like I should just be able to tap that center thing and just type to them.
Yeah, but well, you can do it in a different way. You basically do it because they're on your friends list, and you click on your friends list, and it lets you chat. You know, it lets you chat between Blizzard games, even. But it's an easy functionality that's in the game. You know what I mean?
Or what you can do is if you're playing on your iPad, you can have your computer set up and you can have AIM running on that. And then you can have your Xbox One on with Kinect set up so you can be visual talking while you're chatting also. And if you don't, if you like the visual of, you know, Skype chat on Xbox One, but you like the fidelity of like the built-in headset on the PS4, you have that running for your audio. Just make sure you have your mixer set right. And then, oh man, watch out, Jeff. That's when you really get to needle him.
I was also thinking this week, I can't wait until Xbox One has an app that will recognize my tone of voice. Because when I'm super disappointed in it, you know, when I've like said Xbox on 4 times and it doesn't hear me, and then I finally go, Xbox on. I wish it would be like, sorry, Jeff. Anyway.
I want people to start, and this Sony does this too. All tech has this now, dial-in systems, the Xbox One. I want people to actually start talking the way computers now naturally talk to people. I almost feel like that's worse, where it's like, hi, hey, Christian, welcome back. You know, it's like supposed to be natural speech, but I almost think it sounds or reads more awkward than just welcome user Spicer or whatever. Because could you imagine talking to your friend like that? And oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. I didn't understand you. It's really busy here in my office. Why don't you try that again one more time?
Interesting. All right, it's getting late in the show, which means it is tabletop time. Tabletop time, tabletop time. Right now. Time. Julian, I know you are a board gamer, so tell me what you've been playing.
Oh, yeah. I don't have as regular a board game group as I used to, because we now play D&D Next every week, and that's sort of taken over that slot.
We can talk about that, too.
Well, we could talk about that, but I was going to mention the one game that I had played very recently, which is one of my favorite. You know, I don't have a whole game night, but I managed to get 2 people to come over, but nobody really wants to commit to doing anything like big and meaty, or we're all having cocktails. And so we know somebody's going to take too long because of analysis paralysis. And it's a game called Alien Frontiers, mm-hmm. Which we refer to colloquially in our gaming group as Space Yahtzee, because it effectively is just rolling a whole bunch of dice, and then based on what the dice, they're supposed to be your ships, but you're just rolling dice. And based on what dice you get, you sort of advance towards some strategic objectives on the board. It has sort of a fun space theme. I can teach it in about 10 minutes. It's pretty simple. But it comes back over and over again. There really are very disparate strategies. There's always an interesting decision to make. No matter what you roll with the dice, it's not totally random. There's always something you could be doing. There's lots of special powers that you can be using to change the dice and how they work for you. And it's one that I never see come out like at conventions or when I go over to other people's houses for their sort of big board game weekends. Nobody seems to play this game. I was curious whether this is one that you'd ever played, Jeff?
Yeah, I actually own 2 copies of it. And it's really funny It's really funny that when I was thinking about games that I would talk about on today's episode, I was kind of looking at my shelf and going, what should I talk about this week? And I was like, oh, maybe I should talk about Alien Frontiers. It's a hilarious coincidence. But this was sort of the first big Kickstarter success story in the world of board gaming. And it's a really fun game, as you said. It's easy to teach. There's something, at least for me, inherently fun about rolling dice. And you get to roll a whole crap ton of dice in this game, which is great. And as you said, you get to assign them in different ways. It's also a really well-designed graphically game and has some fun references to old sci-fi authors, like all the planets are named like the Asimov or the, you know, whatever. It's a really great game. I think they just came out with a new edition that has rocket dice, I think, that are super cool.
They slot into little different spaces on them. And there's a couple of expansions which are hit or miss. They add complexity, and sometimes that's fun and sometimes it's annoying. The thing that I love so much about the design is that I think a valid criticism of a lot of Euro-style games and even Ameritrash-style games is that they become multiplayer solitaire once everybody knows what they're doing, or you're just pursuing your little strategy. Every roll of the dice in this is screwing your neighbor.
Yeah.
Like, you are constantly stealing the option for other people to do things. You are kicking them out of places. It is interactive. It's impossible to turtle in this game. You have to be interacting with people, and you're going to piss everyone off, which is what makes it such a great beer and pretzels game.
Yeah, man. I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly true. And it's from 2 to 4 players, so it's not going to be one of those that you can bring out with large groups, but it is really the perfect small group, easy to teach, fun kind of starter game for these types of games. It's a great game and really yep. accessible, I think, to people. People can wrap their heads around
and
the idea.
Fantastic $5 iPad version too, if you just want to see what it's about, because it's a $50 or $60 game and sometimes can be hard to find because they did a limited print runs and there's a new version coming out. But for $5, you buy it on the iPad. It's a perfect implementation. It's a little slow in terms of the AIs taking their turn, but it teaches you the game really well, and it's a great sort of time waster. But until Lords of Waterdeep came out on the iPad, it was my main go-to board game on the iPad.
Awesome. All right, let's take a call. We got some time. Let's see if anybody has something on their playlist or something they've been enjoying for tabletop time. We got a call from the 269 area code. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what do you want to talk about?
Hey, this is Michael from Kalamazoo. How you doing, Jeff, Christian, Julian? I got to do a board game night a few nights ago, and I've been able to play a little bit more with my boyfriend recently, but one game in particular I want to talk about was Dixit. I don't know if you ever
sure.
got to play that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like apples to apples or Cards Against Humanity, but I love it because it's just the pictures on the cards.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of just, it can inspire a conversation anywhere your kind of your mind or your geek nerddom can go.
Yeah, this was a game that came out a few years ago. I think it was the Spiel des Jahres winner that year, which is sort of the biggest international gaming award on the planet. And it really is, it's a staple of my collection. It's one of those games that you can bring out for literally any audience, from, you know, 5 and 6 year olds all the way up to grandparents, people that don't think they like board games. It's just an imagination game and a really accessible, easy one. As he was mentioning, it's got these cards that are sort of little artistic paintings, and it's one person, the person whose turn it is, selects one of those cards from his hand or her hand and describes it in a sentence or a few words or longer. They have a leeway to describe it in a certain way. And their goal, you don't get to see which card they picked. They put that card face down. And then everybody from their hand tries to select the card that they think best suits that sentence or few words or description. And then all those cards are shuffled, and everybody tries to pick which they think is the actual one. And the person whose turn it was tries to craft a description that will get everybody to pick their card except one person. So if everybody selects their card, if they're two on the nose, then they lose points. And if nobody selects their cards, they don't get any points. But if a lot of people, but not everyone, which is a brilliant rule because it requires you to be really subtle and interesting with how you use your description. And the cards themselves, the art on the cards themselves is really esoteric and strange and subtle.
Beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, go ahead, Julian. Tell me about your experience playing it.
Yeah, I mean, the art is beautiful. There's an expansion for it, which has even more cards. And the cards are big, too. They're like not playing card size. They're like twice the size of that.
Right.
And really beautifully printed. And so you end up with something like 200 cards if you bought all the expansions, which is very expensive. This is not a cheap game at all, but you get what you pay for. The best part about this is that you can play this game with like 7-year-olds and they can get it, and you can play it with a room full of really raunchy drunk people.
Yeah.
And it's also incredibly fun too. So it becomes a version of Cards Against Humanity if you play it with raunchy old drunk people. And it becomes like Storytelling Hour when you play it with 7-year-olds. So not many games can cross that spectrum of play.
Yeah, for sure. It's a great game to have in your collection, and an excellent recommendation. Thanks for the call. Let's go to one more call. We got a little extra time here. Call from the 617 area code. You got something on your playlist or something that you wanted to talk about? What's your name and where you're calling from?
I'm Nick, calling from Boston. Quick question. I had a chance to play Carcassonne New World this past weekend. I've played Carcassonne dozens of times before, and it seemed like a game where the mechanic with the surveyors kind of clearing the board fixes one of the problems of a lot of Carcassonne where you get your meeples stuck. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you guys have any games where there's an expansion that you can think of that really fixes a mechanic that you don't like, or maybe some games that really, really need an expansion like that, where there's a significant reboot of one of the rules.
That's a great question. Thanks for the call. I know that's pretty common. Julian, do you have any ideas off the top of your head?
Every version of Risk ever except the original Risk. I mean, you know, Risk is one of those games that's sort of inherently bad and broken, except that it's a fantastic starting point for all the variants that came after it. You know, Risk 2210 probably being the most aggressive expansion of it that did really cool stuff with it that's otherwise, you know, pretty boring. I have not gotten a chance to play New World. My problem with Carcassonne is exactly what he's always described, which is that sense of being trapped into a particular strategy. You know, I feel like as much as I love Agricola, and I know that Jeff, you and I share a love for Uwe Rosenberg games, mm-hmm. I feel like that's one of the biggest problems with Agricola is that you can end up going down a pathway where you're just basically going to be screwed, largely fixed by Caverna, which is sort of the spiritual successor to it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a legitimate criticism of Agricola, and it could use a tweak.
Yeah, this is something that
happens.
Oh, go ahead, Christian.
That's also, I mean, D&D is known for that, right? Where they come out with a new rule set, and while the basic foundation of the game is the same, you can't take someone, you know, it'll take relearning if you've played, you know, I think oftentimes people are like, oh, I love D&D, especially older people, like maybe our age that haven't played in a while, they'll sit back down and they'll need to spend time relearning. You can dive in and play, but it's a different game than what you remembered from maybe when you were a kid hanging out, you know, in the summer or whatever.
Yeah, this particular question about updating games through expansions, it's something that happens pretty often. And oftentimes it'll be like, oh, a whole second edition will come out and it will completely replace the first. You know, these games go out into the wild and the designers see play styles or interpretations of the rules or strategies that they never anticipated. And so oftentimes part of an expansion will be sort of course correcting. Two games come to mind for me, one of which is the same exact problem you guys are talking about with Carcassonne, which, a game called Lords of Vegas, which is a really fun game about owning and operating casinos. And it just had an expansion called Up, which is the exact same idea, where oftentimes with Lords of Vegas, you'd get trapped in an area and you wouldn't be able to expand out and you'd kind of get screwed. With Up, you can now build up, as the name suggests, and create skyscrapers. So a really cool idea, and it really changes the dynamic of the game and fixes, I think, a problem with the first game.
But then you have to kick that one old guy out of his house, and it's really sad.
That's right. The other game that comes to mind immediately is Thunderstone. There's a version of Thunderstone called Thunderstone Advance, which is basically a reboot for Thunderstone, and I would never suggest anyone that was thinking about buying Thunderstone buy the original Thunderstone. Buy Thunderstone Advance. It's better. The rules are written more clearly. The components are better. It's got a mat or a board that it comes with that lays things out. Thunderstone is basically a Dominion-esque deck-building game, but it's got a cool fantasy theme where you're defeating bad guys and buying cool items to put on your characters and stuff like that. Really cool game, but yeah, it's one of those where ostensibly Thunderstone Advance is an expansion, but it's really rebooting this franchise and fixing everything that was wrong with it. Actually, Julian, I want to hear about D&D Next a little bit. I've been flirting with the idea of going over to D&D Next. We're still playing 4th edition with my group.
Oh, you're in 4th. You're in WoW, the D&D game.
Yeah, but you know, it works for us. We kind of dig the mechanics of 4th edition. I think everything's so clear and easy. Like all your spells and all your traits and everything are right there in front of you. So tell me why Next is better.
So Next, is really, it goes back, I would say, even pre D&D 3.5. to the sort of core of old AD&D. It gets rid of a ton of kerfuffle that, you know, has in detritus that has been bolted onto D&D over the years. And it will feel very familiar to anybody who's played any version of D&D. The systems are very simple. It adds a couple of new mechanics, but it gets rid of about 100 of them. The key new mechanic being the idea of advantage or disadvantage. And if you have advantage, you roll two dice, pick the highest one. If you have disadvantage, you roll two dice, you pick the lowest one. So it matters a lot.
And that's something obviously that a DM can award at their discretion, right?
No, they're specific things. So, for instance, like, you know, the traditional thief going in for a backstab undetected gets advantage. Mm. You know, or if you're invisible or something like that, you're going to get advantage. So it tends to be sort of a condition, to put it in fourth edition terms, of having or not having disadvantage or disadvantage replaces a ton of plus one this, minus four that. Mm-hmm. Effectively. You know, that little tweak all by itself, plus removing a lot of just sort of extraneous rules from the combat system, where it's all much more straightforward, a little bit more like it used to be, means that, you know, once a group is sort of used to the combat system, where we used to be able to play, say, maybe three big encounters an evening, now if we needed to, and this has happened once in the last few months, we've actually gotten through 9 significant encounters.
Wow.
In one evening's play session.
That's crazy.
Which is a ton, but it was totally in story, so it felt great. It didn't feel like we were trying to plow through it. It was just this sort of cascade of resource use and replenishment in the dungeon situation that was super fun. So it actually, I think, learns a lot of lessons from both the way things used to be, but also a lot of storytelling points from smelly hippie role-playing games that get the rules out of the way in favor of actually just letting the story get told. So I'm really, really digging it. I'm really excited for sort of the official rule set to come out. My concern, honestly, is that the playtest set which is what anybody playing D&D Next is using, was deliberately pretty small, right? It doesn't have a billion different character classes.
Yeah.
And everything. It's pretty limited because it's a playtest set. My only concern is when they launch this thing officially that they bolt a bunch of crap onto it we haven't seen yet. I don't think they're going to. That certainly doesn't seem to be the way they're headed. What it lives as now is a really beautiful streamlined system that just lets you move a story along, roll a bunch of dice, kill a lot of monsters, get a bunch of loot, and move on.
Well, that makes me very excited. Rumor has it July might be the release for D&D Next officially, so that could be really cool.
I'll be shocked if they're not selling it at Gen Con
right.
In August. I mean, that would be a miss of all misses.
Yeah, it seems to be the strategy. Very cool. Very cool. This has been a great episode. I can't thank you enough for being on, Julian. So great to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's been, I'm a devoted listener, so it's great to finally be on.
Oh, I appreciate it. As am I of your work, be it written or verbal as well. Tell the people where they can find said work.
So almost exclusively at gamerswithjobs.com, which is both a community site and also a place where you can find various video and podcasty related things. We do a weekly podcast called the Gamers with Jobs conference call, which we're going on something like 400 episodes, something ridiculous like that. Years and years and years we've been doing that. And a lot of community game nights and things like that as well, if you're looking for fun folks to play with.
Yeah, they were one of the first communities I joined years and years and years ago when I first started a launch day of World of Warcraft. I remember I joined the Gamers with Jobs community. It was so cool meeting a bunch of really great, nice people in a community that's supportive and not full of D-bags. So all too rare online, I'd say.
Yeah.
Christian, how about you this week? What's going down?
So I'm on Twitter @Spicer. And if you're listening to this today, Monday, tomorrow, Tuesday, is What's New at NerdMelt. It's a free show. And then it comes out as a podcast on the Nerdist Network, What's New with Christian Spicer. And it's three comics do new material. And then we go up to the Nerdist podcast booth and talk about the writing process, what worked, what didn't, while the live audience is entertained by a fantastic headliner. And tomorrow that is Joe Wangert, who you've probably seen on Modern Family. He's a writer for The Kroll Show. He just recorded his Comedy Central half hour, so that'll be coming out very soon. He's a great guy, super funny. He'll be headlining. It's Tuesday at 9 p.m. here in Los Angeles. And a little further out, if you're in New York, at the end of June, I will be out there. It's out there every month. My show Improv versus Stand-Up is at UCB in New York. But I will be out there for it again. And then we're also doing it as part of the Del Close Marathon, which is one of the largest and definitely one of the best improv festivals in the world. It's amazing and just so much great improv, always huge pop-ins and big surprises. So we will be out there for that the end of June if you're in New York. Come say hi. Man, DCM, so much fun. I'm really excited.
Cool beans. We have what I wish could be an official announcement, but is not official yet. So this still could change.
Yes.
But I'm hopeful that it won't, because I'm really excited. It seems like we're going to be able to do daily DLCs for the week of E3. And the way I'm envisioning this is lots of listener call-ins. I want to hear what you guys are buzzing about for E3. And we're going to talk about, I'm going to be at the show floor. Christian and I both will be at the show floor the whole week, talking about all the biggest stuff, the conferences, the games we get hands on with. I've already started all my appointments all week long. So that week we won't have our usual Monday 11 a.m. Pacific time show, but we will have nightly wrap ups all week, Monday through Thursday. Again, still could change. I haven't got the official go-ahead from the higher-ups at 5x5, but the initial indication looks like it's going to happen, and I could not be more excited about that. I've been wanting to do a call-in show for E3 for a long time, and I think this is the perfect year for that. So stay tuned for more info as we ramp up. We're going to keep that hype train rolling all month long until we get to June. There you go. Also, you can check out my YouTube channel for reviews of stuff other than video games, including this. Tonight, I'm headed to go see Godzilla. So you'll see a review of that this week before the movie comes out. And also got to see Million Dollar Arm already. So there's a review coming out this week for that. That's youtube.com/KanataJeff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Kanata with two N's and one T. And we appreciate you supporting this show by giving us reviews on iTunes, by supporting our sponsor, Mac Mini Colo, and by telling your friends. We appreciate that very, very much. You can also send in feedback to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And we hope you tune in next week, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We'll be here. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.